Hello, everybody. I am Bill Buckmaster, along with producer Rosemary Brandt. Rose and I welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. It's Thursday, May 8th, 2014. Hope you're having a good day. The Buckmaster Show live line is open for you, 790-2040. We also invite you to join in on the fun on our Facebook page. It's Bill Buckmaster. It's time for our new monthly segment, the Buckmaster Showdown, featuring two gentlemen who have yet to agree on an issue other than the fact that they enjoy coming on the program. And for that, I'm very happy. In the right corner, seated to my right, Sean McCluskey, Mr. McCluskey, Tea Party and Republican Party activist, and like myself, a Chicagoland native. And in the left-hand corner, leftist David Morales, creator of the Three Sonorans blog site. And seated in the middle, yours truly, who today is wearing a striped referee shirt and a flak jacket, because David and Sean have been going at it now in preparation for today's showdown for days on Facebook. I mean, if you're not friends with these guys, you need to be, because you'll get in a lot of the action. But David, I'm going to begin today with calling you out. Last month, during our discussion about Mexican-American studies, we were talking about the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, which ended the Mexican War of 1846 to 1848, and you gave the impression that the treaty guaranteed linguistic and cultural rights to new citizens of the United States, and that is not true. Nowhere in the treaty are non-English linguistic or cultural rights of formerly Mexican citizens or the descendants living in the United States even mentioned.
Well, what's interesting is, that's one of those rights that you think would be implicit, but the treaty does specifically, you know, lay out that citizens are former Mexicans living in this land have rights to their full property, to citizenship. What's interesting, though, is, the treaty itself is written in Spanish. And so, you know, if we have no rights to, the Spanish language, you know, why it's actually written. I have a picture of it here where it's half English and half Spanish, the entire treaty that was ratified by the U.S. Congress. And regarding linguistics and cultural rights, I mean, that's a basic right inherent, like, you know, the United Nations, UNESCO, you know, everywhere has said that there's this basic right to your cultural and linguistics. And I mean, the other question would be, okay, for sure it guarantees our citizenship, right to own property and all that stuff. Is the claim that once you become an American citizen, you don't have a right to language and culture?
So you're kind of saying an implied right.
Right. I mean, I don't know of any.
Oh, it's certainly implied. I mean, look, drive down I-19, drive on the south side where I used to live. Yeah. The billboards are primarily in Spanish. They're not in English. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Because we speak Spanish and we speak English. You've maintained the culture of it. Mm-hmm. It didn't need to be, but the caller who corrected it said that you had said this and it wasn't true, but that's all. That was the only reason why they brought it up. Mm-hmm. However, with that being said, I don't think that it should be taken away. It should be maintained. However, it also should be. We do a lot of property management, and I often get the call, and the first question is, "Do you speak Spanish?" And they say it in English. That's not so good. Then they speak Spanish. It's clear as day. Mm-hmm. It's more comfortable. So I have two Spanish speakers. One is whiter than the cup, and the other one, she looks Hispanic. I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. it works that way. But with that being said, it puts me at a disadvantage, and I wish that I could speak Spanish, but I can't. Well, I can, but I just can't say anything worth
it. And I mispronounced it. It's Hidalgo.
Hidalgo.
Thank you, Rose.
Got to roll your R's.
And she called me out on that I mispronounced. But that's why we pay Rose the big bucks. Charles wants to join in the conversation. Charles, did David say something that you say is not accurate?
Yes. Well, he's partially accurate. First of all, thanks for having the guts to come on and have a debate in public, to both of you. Mm-hmm. Second of all, the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo was printed in both Spanish and English, and it was done that way at the signing specifically so there'd be no disagreements. But to say that it was written in Spanish is not accurate. It was translated into Spanish, but it was written in both English and Spanish at the time it was written. But My question for David is this. David, when you say something that's so open and notoriously easy to fact check, why is it that you would use Bill's show as a platform to say something that's obviously on its face isn't accurate? Well, why would you choose Bill's show to do that?
And before he answers that, I believe he did say, Charles, that it was written in both a few moments. He said it was written in both English and Spanish.
I believe what you first said was that it was written in Spanish originally, and it's in both English and half in English and half in Spanish.
Well, the original is in Spanish and in English.
Now let David answer your question.
I mean, I brought a picture here of it. I mean, it was written. My point was that to claim that the treaty is anti-Spanish or something is ridiculous because the original was written in Spanish and in English, as the picture here shows, which you guys can see. The United States, has this whole history of breaking treaties. I mean, just as a Native American. So, you know, you can say, well, who cares what the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo says? And actually, there's been hundreds of court cases after that, the right to property was basically ignored because, you know, banks came in and lots of people just came in and took over most of the property. I mean, in New Mexico, Texas,
But I think Charles was also implying that you were making deliberate falsehoods, and I want you to defend yourself.
No, what I said was true. I mean, the original is in Spanish, and it is in English.
Okay. Anyway, I want to move on. We got a city budget that a lot of people are talking about. Sean, buses, KIDCO programs, social service programs, they were facing a huge budget deficit.
Well, they still are.
And I had Councilwoman Ulick on the show. I think she said they had whittled it down to about $1 million.
At what expense? Who did they hijack the money from, basically? What did they gut?
Do you think that the KIDCO and some of these other social service programs, they need to take a hard look at it?
They certainly need to take a hard look at KIDCO. And I've been, since 2009, beating on KIDCO, and I've learned a lot about KIDCO. I think KIDCO is necessary to a degree because it keeps kids off the street, and it helps alleviate some of the pressures on TPD for the calls they get for the delinquents. With that being said, though, there needs to be a check and balance, especially for the income levels and the employment levels. You've got a lot of moms dropping off their kids, and they're rolling up in Escalades and Priuses and brand new vehicles. The working individual, whichever one it is, they're going to Raytheon making $80,000, $90,000 a year. They're paying the same rate for this daycare as the individual single mom who has two children and, you know, the deadbeat dad left. I think that person needs a helping hand, and the person who's making the $80,000, $90,000 a year should foot a little more of the bill to offset the budgetary deficits that we have in the city.
And David, you believe actually that bus service in this city, more should be going into public transportation. I think you said on Facebook you'd like to see it free.
It's free.
All bus service in the city free.
Or as close to free as possible. I mean, if you think about it, the economy requires a transportation system, and I think if you just think logically about what the coming future about peak oil and the sustainability of everyone having, you know, their own gas, and I mean, it's we're gonna come across a crisis very soon where gas is gonna be $10-$20 a gallon, or there's gonna be no gas at all. And so what happens to the economy when you don't have a system in place?
Capitalism will take place. We'll have rickshaws. That's how you get over the gas issue. And I'm joking aside. Yeah. However, there's 1 million riders annually for SunTran. It's on their website. They say 1 million riders per year. Mm-hmm. They spend $48 million.
There's 20 million riders per year.
20 million?
Yes.
So they had 1 million riders. Ridership was at 1 million riders, 1 million rides. At 1 million rides, it's $45 a ride at 45 million.
I have the numbers here that are correct. The average subsidy for a bus rider is about $1.62. The average bus per hour is $51. I just want to make
sure. The average bus is $51. It takes $51 an hour to operate the bus. There's no way possible.
It's true.
It's simply not possible. 51. I mean, the routes that they're going with and the ridership that they have and the amount of time that it takes, the inefficiencies that are throughout the system, you could definitely cut this in half. How is it that we survived on $29 million from the city budget in 2009, and it's $48 million now, but yet we've gutted police and fire? We've gutted public safety. What we've taken from Parks and Rec.
What do you mean gutted police? I mean, police have a
We're budget. Short 211 officers currently.
Since when?
Compared to what? Have you seen the crime rates? And we have enough police officers in this town?
Are you talking about the average?
The budget has gone
increased.
When you
look at the population.
The population yes. size, the density that we
the
have, we should have another 200. We should have another 211
officers,
I believe it is currently.
Yeah,
we're going to lose more.
I know if you look at the city and you compare it
the
to
the amount
others.
Of people that we need to cover the city, the size that we are, we're short 211 officers.
The problem
Your
is
response times, look at any neighborhood that we go through from here to get to the university. The response times in those neighborhoods on the break-ins is astronomical. It's not TPD's fault. That's our city council's fault.
Okay, before we talk too much about the police situation, Carl wants to join in on the Buckmaster Show live line, and he wants to get in on this discussion about transportation and buses. Go ahead, Carl.
Yes, on the issue with the buses, I worked for the federal government for a while, and as far as I know, and I know my organization, if you were in the feds, you could get bus passes, which cost you nothing. And so that's coming out of the federal tax budget. And so, effectively, other people are subsidizing a large number of people who can afford to pay their own way on the buses. So that's
same Kidco situation again. Yeah, absolutely. There needs to be checks and balances, especially in the free bus passes that we give out. They give them out to all the organizations. They can get them through the city. The organization then has no responsibility to ensure that this person is in financial need. They can just freely give it out. Well, you and I pay for that.
Yeah. First of all, I want to say when you use the verb gut, you make it sound like the city council is gutting, like actually taking away cops.
They are.
They're not. The budget's been increasing every single year. And so you're making it, I mean, maybe it's not up to what you think it is, but they're not taking cops away. They're not taking fire away. Now, with regards to the
percentage-wise, the entire budget has increased, yes. If you look at the amount of increase in the budget in other areas, mm-hmm. such as SunTran, which had a 33% increase from 2009 to current day, the cops have not received that. They've gone backwards.
I'm saying, Larry Lopez,
if you're listening, please call in because I know you have the facts.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, there's some other things that have happened with the bus. Like, for example, if you want to really save money, mm-hmm. you would actually cut the express routes, which cost a quarter more. And those buses, you subsidize up to like it's $9.92 per passenger because you're taking them all the way to Oro Valley for
correct.
A quarter more.
Correct. And they get 25% more. I agree with you there.
Okay, well, let's take a break right here. What do you say, Rose? This is the Buckmaster Showdown, and we welcome all calls, 790-2040. We'll be back right after this.
Don't let the bees put a sting into your day. Call the professionals at 5-Star Pest Control. We have options for you. We can either send them to bee heaven, or we can remove the bees with their special equipment. Bee stings are the number one killer of humans. Call us and don't get stung. 886-0045, 5-star-termite.com.
5-Star Pest Control, we know what bugs you.
The important message you're about to hear is brought to you by Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona.
Is your water hard to live with? Are you tired of water that tastes bad and smells bad too? Do you have hard water buildup on your shower walls, tile, and faucets? Are you tired of dry skin and dull hair? Are you tired of dingy laundry? What about premature replacing of faucets, fixtures, dishwashers, and water heaters? Well, it's time to do something about it, and Culligan Water of Tucson has a solution. A high-efficiency water softener that can eliminate these problems for $9.95 per month for the first 3 months rental with an annual service agreement. It's easy. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700 for complete details on this introductory offer. This is a limited-time offer, so call us today and start enjoying all the benefits and the savings of a Culligan high-efficiency water softener now. Remember, 792-9700 or visit us at arizonaculligan.com. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
Widened and improved roads, new bike lanes, sidewalks, pedestrian crossings, and bus pullouts. Many of these safety improvements are funded by the Regional Transportation Authority through its 20-year plan, which is making a difference in our lives.
Hi, I'm Lori. I live near the Twin Peaks Interchange. Since that new interchange and road opened, life has become a whole lot simpler. The new road saves me time, and it's a beautiful drive. I love it.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you since 2006. Visit rtamobility.com or Facebook. UA Biosphere 2's new ocean gallery and its large viewing windows give tour visitors a look under the surface of the existing Biosphere 2 ocean. Within the ocean gallery is the new Return to the Sea of Cortez exhibit, which chronicles the storied 1940 journey of author John Steinbeck and marine biologist Ed Ricketts to the Gulf. Experience this remarkable journey for yourself. Come visit Biosphere 2 today. Info at b2science.org.
Today's rapidly changing world brings challenges and opportunities. At Pima Community College, we are working with business and community leaders to develop programs that provide the right training for today's high-demand jobs. Whether the goal is a new career, transferring to a four-year college, or lifelong learning, Pima Community College can help you open the door to new opportunities.
For more information, call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu. Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for authentic wood-fired Neapolitan pizzas, plus delicious pastas, panini, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is homemade using the finest and freshest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore has two locations open daily, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events.
Want the best care for your companion animal? Then Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson is the place for specialty vets for your special pet. With a state-of-the-art, award-winning facility, only the Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson delivers compassionate, comprehensive veterinary emergency and specialty care 24/7 in a wide range of fields. Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson at North La Cañada Drive at West River or online at vscott.com. That's vscot.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Showdown. David Morales is here and Sean McCluskey back to the live line. And we will find out, this was actually a caller who did not want to go on the air, but wanted to point out that the Phoenix City Council just last night, Sean, cut public safety pay by 2.5% to help with their $30 million deficit.
They're going through a lot of the same problems in Phoenix. Their pension spiking just like it is here in Tucson. The numbers are eerily similar. The budgets and size of the city and the size of the force are almost identical. And they're doing the same thing the city of Tucson did. And it's proof that they went through and literally gutted our our public safety. Excuse me.
All right. David, I called you out at the beginning of the show when we were talking about the treaty concerning Mexican-American studies. You want to call Sean out on something he said last week.
Well, last month,
last month.
That we have 55,000 teachers but 65,000 school administrators, which I haven't seen any evidence of that.
I will reach out to Ken Bennett and I will ask him again because that's where I got those numbers from. And then yesterday on the Wake Up Guys, Doug Ducey had mentioned $90 billion, or is it $9 billion goes into all of the school systems that we have, and there's 250 school districts. Mm-hmm. So that's what, $363 million, I think we figured it out to be, per school district. Where's that money going into USD, and is it being effectively used?
I mean, the problem with that is the you just look at the budget online, and it's $3.8 billion statewide. I mean, I even sent you the link. So
that's from the state. How much from federal?
It's about $5 billion.
So 5 plus 3.6, we can get to the 9 billion real close.
Yeah, actually, I think it's five. Well, so I don't know.
We're going to get real close to the 9 billion. So my numbers are 363 per school district should be real close.
Well, I mean, the goal
call it $350 million to run a school district. TUSD is not appropriately using that money. There's no way you can sit there and say that they are.
Well, I mean, I think we have more criticism towards school districts than we do like police departments. So like, we're afraid to ever criticize spending by police departments because, you know, we say.
So you're saying they're police and fire are kind of a sacred cow?
They are. I mean, we call them public safety. And like, you know, just like you might say, well, not all money that goes to education goes to educating students. Well, I think not all money that goes to public safety goes to public safety. For example, all the sick pay and the you know, like Villaseñor just got a $32,000. He bought, you know, the city bought back his sick pay. I mean, was that needed? I mean, that you could hire, you know, some people with that.
In the military, I could do the same thing. In the private sector, I could do it with my extra sick days.
And it's been used as an incentive.
And it has. It's been used as a bargaining chip both for and against them.
To keep us in the recruiting game.
Exactly.
But it only applies to police. Like, it never doesn't apply to all the other departments.
How many of the people are getting shot at? How many other people are running into a burning building? How many people work 4 days, 10 to 24 hours a shift?
Well, let me ask you a question. How many of the police are being shot at?
All of them.
All of them have been shot at.
Well, okay, they all have the opportunity to get shot at. Whether you're riding a desk or you're riding a car, some crazy guy can walk into the station and shoot at you.
And you could say the same thing
for a teacher in our day and age now. But if you had more police, you'd have less people shooting at your teachers.
If you had more education, you'd have less people that were criminals.
I agree with you. Okay. You can raise your kids one of two ways. You can either do it in the classroom or you can have a prison guard do it for you.
All right, let's go to Lyndon now on the Buckmaster Show Live Line. Has a question for David Morales about his education.
Yeah, with David's obvious critical thinking, I was just curious if he was a product of the Tucson Unified School District.
I'm actually a product of the Marana Unified School District, but that's a public school also, and the U of A.
Okay, thank you, Lyndon. So, I mean, you're a supporter of public education, right, David?
I'm a huge supporter. I mean, I'm if you want to call me, I've depended my whole life upon government programs from, you know, funding my education. Free and reduced lunch programs, to Pell Grants, to fellowships from the NSF for graduate school. There is no way I could have went to school and gotten my higher, you know, higher degree.
And you teach now.
And I teach now, and I give back to the community. And I think it's unfortunate, like, right now we have skyrocketing tuition rates. Arizona continues to spend less every year on education while they're spending more on prisons and cops. So the goal, like if you think of from a social engineering point of view, is if you spend less on education, and we actually spend more on prisons than we do on the university system, when there's far less inmates than there are, you know, college students. So it actually
because
costs
if you put the inmates in a pink tent and pink underwear, people complain. So you have to give them quality of life. Well, right. If you took that away from them and you took the money away from the prison system, I'm all for it. Let's build them tent cities. I'll give them air conditioners. They can live in a tent. They can wear pink underwear, and I'll build schools.
You'll raise the money for their air conditioning unit.
Well, no. They got to pay for it. Go working on the chain gang.
All right. There's the question now for Mr. McCluskey coming in from Christopher on the Buckmaster Show Live Line. Go ahead, Christopher.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. The first point I'd like to make about the sick pay buyback, a lot of those initiatives are pushed through by the unions, and they put pressure on the city councils in order to get that through. So that's one problem I have. The question that I have for McCluskey is, do you believe the cops should be getting paid a higher wage than they currently are right now? I know that we're understaffing levels. I believe that we should have more police officers, but I don't think that we need to pay them more on a yearly basis. So what say you?
Oh, I can give you the only answer to that is you need to maintain competitive. And right now, guys are leaving here, and they're going to other municipalities, and they're getting paid $10,000 and $15,000 more annually. Why are they leaving? Because they're getting paid more. It's not because the workload's less or the job's any less dangerous, but they're getting paid more. So we're losing our police officers, and we're losing them at a rapid rate.
Now, do you think we could save money in the public safety budget if the cops weren't allowed to drive their cars all the way home to Marana and Vail and Oro Valley?
Oh, I agree. I agree. There should be some restrictions on that. Some of them need to drive those cars home, but not all of them. It's just like the city workers. I don't think the city workers should do the same thing.
When does their day begin? Like as soon as they get in the car from home?
Well, as a police officer, your day really never ends. Because I mean,
correct. But once they have meetings and they have in and out meetings, so they have briefings, so they have to attend, and that's when their
and about the cars when they drive the cars home, are these police cars?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
okay. I've got one that lives in my neighborhood.
A lot of them live in Miranda and Vail and Oro Valley.
You could argue, gentlemen,
there's money to be saved there if you didn't take those home.
And just the fact that seeing a police car parked could be a deterrent.
Oh, absolutely.
What do you think, David?
Well, it could be, but it
works well for Miranda and Oro Valley.
It's a benefit for the suburbs. But you just think
most of the cops don't live in Tucson.
Okay, Christopher, quickly a rebuttal to what you heard, my friend. Go ahead.
Yes, McCluskey, I just want to let you know, I think only a handful, less than 10 officers have left, citing result of them leaving for greater pay. But
no,
the problem
sir.
That I have is that you have to look at the cost of labor. You can't look at a police officer in L.A. versus Tucson.
I'm looking at Tucson versus...
One at a time, guys, please.
But the way employers look at salaries is the cost of labor. The problem is Tucson has a depressed cost of labor. So your goal should be raise the cost of labor for everybody, hence cops will get paid more. As a conservative, you should be counting that message, not the message of let's pay the police officers more and let's increase their union.
Okay.
You need to increase all of the salaries in this city.
I'm all for that. But we need the money there first. The other cities that are paying more, like Paradise Valley, Scottsdale, Glendale, Mesa, Chandler, Tempe, they're all paying more than Tucson.
All right, guys, thank you very much. The conversation will continue on the Facebook pages of Sean McCluskey and David Morales. If you want to join in on the fun, both of them would be more than happy to friend you on Facebook, I am sure. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
All right, we'll be right back.
Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico make a great getaway for a weekend or longer. It's just 3 hours or so from Tucson and 15 degrees cooler to get to an area with so much to offer, from hiking, camping, exploring downtown historic Silver City, or just relaxing in a lovely environment. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete list of great places to stay and visit in Silver City, Grant County, New Mexico. Vero Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Vero Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Vero Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Jerry! What's wrong?
The client conference call is right now.
I thought it was next week.
I don't have the presentation ready.
Okay. Blame the internet. Say it went out.
They'll never believe that. They know we have Cox Business. Our internet is too reliable and is 100 times faster than basic DSL.
Say customer service is closed.
Cox Business has 24/7 support.
Well, say it would take too long to get a technician here.
No, they know the award-winning customer service is local. They told us to get Cox Business.
The call has started.
Good morning.
I forgot about this meeting. We have terrific internet.
Switch to Cox Business Internet and Voice for only $99 a month. Speed options up to 100 times faster than basic DSL. Plus, get a 30-day money-back guarantee and free professional installation with a 3-year agreement. Visit coxbusiness.com and switch today. Ends 8/31/14. Price excludes taxes, fees, and may be subject to minimum service requirements. Visit coxbusiness.com for internet speed options and details. Actual speeds vary. Limited 30-day money-back guarantee. Exclusions and other restrictions apply.
Tucson Desert Art Museum, Tucson's newest art museum, is home to one of the premier collections of pre-1940s Navajo and Hopi textiles, exquisite classic and contemporary paintings and photography, early maps and historic artifacts. Visualize history through art at Tucson Desert Art Museum on East Tankerverde Road at Sabino Canyon Road, just west of Udall Park, and on the web at TucsonDart.com. That's TucsonDart.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Bill Buckmaster. It's 12:35 on KVOI, The Voice. The Community Foundation of Southern Arizona has just awarded nearly $356,000 in grants, with funding spread among 25 local and regional nonprofit organizations that are working to alleviate poverty and its effects on children, as well as organizations that are working on end-of-life issues. Joining me in studio is Barbara Brown, and we're good to see Barbara again. Barbara is Vice President of Programs and Community Initiatives at the Community Foundation of Southern Arizona. Barbara, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you today?
Doing very well. We had talked when the word went out that folks could apply, and quite a few took us up on it.
Oh, boy, they sure did. The grant that went out about poverty, it was a process that invited folks in Southern Arizona to send in a letter of inquiry, but it wasn't just poverty generally, it was poverty and its effects on children. So it was narrowed just a little bit, and we've talked about the poverty issue here. There was a series of articles in the Daily Star and on AZPM and in other places. So it wasn't that we were surprised by all of the information that we were receiving about it. It's just we knew we had to do something. So we sent out this call for letters of inquiry, and we received 72.
Wow.
Asking for $1.8 million. Now, I got to tell you, the hardest job was the grants committee, the community investment team, winnowing that down, because, you know, Bill, we only had 200,000 available.
Mm-hmm.
So 1.8 million to 200,000. So they whittled that down to a number where the groups were asking for about 400,000, and invited applications, read those applications, did a site visit to all of those organizations, and then deliberated on the grants that would go out. And in the meantime, from the time we sent out the request for proposal to when we actually issued another, we were able to acquire another $20,000. So it was $220,000 awarded to 21 groups.
Barbara Brown is with us from the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona. Where does the money come from that the Community Foundation then is able to give these organizations?
Well, for this particular grant round, we have some funds that the dollars are unrestricted. So the donors have set those up, and the idea is for the grants committee or the board to respond to whatever is a important need in the community at that time. And so those unrestricted dollars combined with dollars from donors who really wanted to address this issue allowed us to make these grants.
And there was a gift that made possible some of the working on the end of life issues, correct?
Yes. So the end of life grant round was kind of run at the same time. That request for proposal went out. And of course, that's a lot narrower. And really the focus of that was to get people talking about end of life issues. Often what happens is folks don't think about it. They don't want to talk about it. And people go into hospice 10 days prior to their passing, missing out on opportunities to support the family and to support the individual, making their life better. So the idea is to have conversation. What was wonderful about this is that there was a donor who set up a fund in the 80s, and that had very specific criteria that she wanted to focus on, kind of fields of mm-hmm. interest. And hospice was what she wrote in the 80s, was one of them. And so the committee looked at that, and things have changed a lot since the 80s, and expanded it to kind of end of life, still with her idea of having conversation and making sure that people have the best care that they can receive. And we think that this particular fund, or the amount available for this topic, is probably the biggest amount of philanthropic dollars around this topic in a community foundation across the country. There's $100,000 available every year.
Wow.
So we got some really interesting applications as part of this, because we just said end of life and mm-hmm. and communication and making people's lives better for both the people mm-hmm. who are in distress and their families. And so we ended up with an application from the Humane Society, for instance.
Yeah, I see that.
And that was funded to have dogs go visit people in care centers mm-hmm. so that they could have that opportunity to be with an animal mm-hmm. to Tucson Meet Yourself. Now you're probably really astounded by seeing them on the list.
Yeah, I saw that. Tucson Meet Yourself on the list.
That's kind of odd.
The connection to end of life issues.
Well, what they're going to do is they are going to do a study on the different cultural groups that make up Tucson, mm-hmm. and they are going to write up information about what their culture is at around that issue. Mm-hmm. So, do you have a wake? Do you not have a ceremony? Do you eat? Do you dance? Do mm-hmm. you whatever? And so that's going to be a wonderful community resource, so that folks who want to work with, say, the Hispanic community, or they can go and read that information and know a little bit about that group going in before they meet with them. So it's going to be a wonderful resource.
Barbara Brown with us from the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona. This is done annually, these grants?
Yes. Okay. So the end of life will be annually, taking place about the same time, in the spring, and we'll put out a call through our service area, which is all of Southern Arizona. The poverty grant round, the grant round itself will occur every year. Now, whether the topic will be poverty or not, we don't know. There was a lot of attention on poverty, and we thought that it would be good to respond. But it may be that education is the is the theme next year or some other topic. So
give us an example of some of the groups that will benefit in
that
the poverty.
That got a grant?
Or, yes.
That got a grant? Well, mm-hmm. you know, they really range from Camp Wildcat, mm-hmm. right? They wanted a grant. Their club on campus, they work with children who are identified as being low income mm-hmm. from schools in our area, and they take kids that are in the eighth grade to the Grand Canyon every year in June, and they do, yes, look at the Grand Canyon and do all the nature kind of stuff, but they spend a lot of time talking about the importance of higher education and to do well in high school and to go on to college, because most of the kids that go on this trip do not have parents that went through that track. Mm-hmm. And so that's pretty interesting. All the way to Patagonia Creative Arts Association. You know, in Patagonia, there's not a lot to do mm-hmm. after school. There's the library, and there is going to the Creative Arts Association. So, and there's a lot of poverty in that community.
Our next guest will be from the Community Food Bank.
Yes,
they
absolutely.
They are a beneficiary.
Absolutely. That farm-to-school program is absolutely amazing. We are funding Monzo School to help underwrite their gardening program. Mm-hmm. They have a hydroponic garden there. They have a traditional garden, and they have chickens. Just walking into that school is amazing. And as a result, what's really wonderful is they now have a farmer's market that services, that the students do, that services their neighborhood.
Wow. So there's a wide-ranging different missions here, but they're
absolutely.
All aimed at trying to make this a better community.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then some traditional groups like Assistance League, they received a grant to dress children, which mm-hmm. you know that they do every year, so that kids can go to school and have everything they need and a backpack as well.
Barbara Brown, thank you very much from the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona, and always a pleasure talking with you, Barbara.
It's always great to see you.
Thanks a lot. We'll be right back.
Here in Tucson, we love our beautiful mountain views,
but large windows and sliding glass doors are huge energy zappers.
At American Openings, we build our doors just like our energy-saving windows to keep the heat where it belongs, on the outside. No matter the style, American Openings will create your doors right here in Tucson at a fraction of our competitors' costs. And although the price is less, our quality is excellent. Call today and enjoy our beautiful views year-round without losing your cool.
Call 664-1202 or visit AmericanOpenings.com.
Welcome to A Moment of Hope with Pastor Jim Cords of Desert Hope Lutheran Church.
Blessed to be a blessing. In the beginning, God called Abraham. We hear in Genesis 12:2, I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you and make you famous, and you will be a blessing to others. It was God's intent from the beginning to call a people who would be a blessing to the world. 1 Corinthians 12:7 says, a spiritual gift is given to each of us so that we can help each other. It is what God intends. As believers, God gives us a blessing so that we can be a blessing to the world. The world needs it. We can do it. So let's get going.
A Moment of Hope with Pastor Jim Cords is brought to you by Desert Hope Lutheran Church. If you're looking for a church home, please join us. We meet every Sunday morning at 9 a.m. at Gridley Middle School, located at 350 South Harrison Road, or go to deserthope.org for more information. Desert Hope, bringing lives closer to Christ Jesus.
Hi, I'm Steve Christie. I've served as an RTA board member since 2009 and through last year as its chairman. The RTA continues to be a most successful regional effort, with the RTA and our member jurisdictions completing so far more than 540 construction projects to reduce congestion, increase our safety, and improve crosstown mobility. As part of the original Citizens Advisory Committee, I'm proud of our citizen-driven plan as well as the RTA's accomplishments. We deliver, we promise. Learn more at rtamobility.com.
Today's rapidly changing world brings challenges and opportunities. At Pima Community College, we are working with business and community leaders to develop programs that provide the right training for today's high-demand jobs. Whether the goal is a new career, transferring to a four-year college, or lifelong learning, Pima Community College can help you open the door to new opportunities.
For more information, call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu.
another business trip? Why don't you just drive instead of fly?
Well, nobody brings me snacks or drinks in my car. Very seldom do I get to watch a first-run movie or take a nap while driving.
No, seriously. It must be much cheaper to drive.
Not really. I checked out TIA's cost comparison calculator. Flying from Tucson isn't just convenient. It can actually save money.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Devereaux, Arizona inspires hope in the lives of the most vulnerable members of our community, our children. In Pima County, there are more than 4,000 children in foster care that need your help. Devereaux, Arizona's foster care program gives you the training and support you need to make a difference in the life of a child. Donate, volunteer, or become a foster parent. Find out how at devereauxarizona.org or call 520-296-5551.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is brought to you by our friends over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, coming up over the Memorial Day weekend, which is just around the corner. It will be the 19th annual Silver City Blues Festival, featuring 11 outstanding acts. This has really become the Southwest's unparalleled free musical event. It's only three and a half hours, depending on where you are in the Tucson Valley, to head over to Silver City. If you haven't been over there, it makes a great weekend event. You can find out about the great places to stay and things to do at southwestnewmexico.org. Places like Cottage of Whispering Canyon, and the list goes on and on. Really nice places to stay in the area. Coming up this weekend, the 22nd consecutive year that the National Association of Letter Carriers and the Community Food Bank of Southern Arizona have teamed up to collect donations on this Saturday, which is the annual Stamp Out Hunger Food Drive Day. Dan Turrentine joins us. Dan is the food director for the National Association of Letter Carriers, and Michael McDonald is here, CEO of the Community Food Bank of Southern Arizona. Dan and Michael, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Bill.
Dan, how big a deal is this for the letter carriers?
Oh, tremendous. It is one of our biggest opportunities to give back to the community and to help out the Community Food Bank, which the summer months are generally the really slow collection times for them. So this is a push before the summer to restock their shelves and be ready.
This turns out, Michael McDonald, to probably be the big fundraiser of the year for you.
It really is. Last year, I think we raised about 383,000 pounds of food, and donations came in through our website, communityfoodbank.org. It takes an army of people, and the letter carriers are our superheroes in this and supported by lots of community volunteers and businesses. So we thank you, folks.
What should we be looking for, or what should we put out? What type of material, Dan Turrentine?
Okay, we're looking for canned foods, vegetables, fruits, cereals, peanut butter, any kind of non-perishable foods.
Yeah, because with the warmer weather, you don't want to put anything out.
Correct. That, yeah. And please, no glass containers. This food is going to be handled, you know, over and over, and glass does tend to break.
Is this something encouraged by the Postal Carriers Association, the letter carriers?
Yes, it is. And we also have the rural letter carriers that have signed on the last couple of years in support of us. And the post office supports us too.
Will there be a bag that you're going to leave, or what? Well, how will that work?
Yes. Today we're leaving cards in the boxes, in the mailboxes, to give notice of the food drive. Tomorrow we will be leaving bags. We do have a shortage this year of the bags. So apartment complexes will not be receiving bags in the individual boxes. They can still leave their food by the mail unit, and we will pick it up. But unfortunately, we just didn't receive the number of bags to get one to everybody this year.
So really, any kind of bag would probably do, grocery bag
would do,
or whatever.
Or just leave it there. This is Saturday, May 10th, Stamp Out Hunger Day, and the postal carriers will pick all of that up, and we will collect, hopefully, almost 400,000 pounds of food.
Yeah. Mm. Bill, they can even, if necessary, leave the food items in their mailbox.
Oh,
they
really
don't even have to put a stamp on it.
Okay.
Okay.
So just
we'll pick it up.
So leave it in the mailbox, and could they leave it a day early if they are going out of town?
Bill, they can leave it preferably Saturday, but definitely a day early. They can leave it as much as a week late.
Okay.
You know, there'll be people that'll be out of town and they'll get the stuff in their mailbox, and we'll be picking up food for the next week. We do encourage to try to get it on Saturday.
Michael McDonald, you've been the CEO for about 4 months now. And how are things going at the food bank?
Well, you know, need is so tremendous. And so we work with 300 agencies in 5 counties in southern Arizona. And the volume of folks in need during persistent poverty, we know that folks need a hand up and they need a handout. And that's why this food drive is so important. Right before we come up on summer, kids are going to be out of school, so they're not receiving free and reduced breakfast and lunch. They're going to be hungry. We need to help them. The letter carriers, the community helps feed children in the summer.
I have seen figures showing anywhere from 25% to 35% of people in our area need food assistance at one time during the year. That seems incredibly high. We shouldn't have that.
We should not have that, and the estimate right now is 30% of children
are
food insecure.
Yeah, and when you say food insecure, that means they're missing a meal.
That's right, and they don't know where the next meal is coming from.
Mm. When the letter carriers get together, is there a problem with space in the truck, or do you have enough space
for all of this stuff? We do tend to fill up some of the vehicles at times, but we have volunteers that will meet them out on the routes, and they'll transfer the food to their pickup truck or whatever vehicle they have and take it back to the stations. But we're always looking for more volunteers, always, and at the stations to help sort the food also.
And you mentioned rural areas, and this radio station has a very strong signal. We're heard really almost all the way over to the New Mexico border, to the east, up to Phoenix, to the north. What about folks who do live in rural areas? They're part of this too?
They are. That's correct. Our branch covers all of southern Arizona, including Casa Grande, Payson, everything south.
The
and
food, yeah,
we'll
I was
pick
just,
it up.
I was going to say, Dan, excuse me for interrupting you there, but Michael, I was going to ask you, the food bank has a fabulous reputation. It's one of the oldest food banks in the United States. I think the oldest is Phoenix, but we're coming up on almost 40 years.
That's correct.
And you look at what a role, a very significant role, the food bank has played in this community. When you say that a lot of the kids aren't getting, they're going to bed in some cases without a main meal, what is the food bank supplying for specifically for the children?
Well, I think Barbara Brown in your previous segment mentioned some of our school garden programs that we're doing, and we do child nutrition.
Monzo Elementary.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just one of dozens. So we're helping children and their families grow food, learn how to prepare food, especially healthy food, get access to healthy, fresh produce, and maybe even make some meals they've never made before. And so there's a kind of a family bonding, community building piece that happens. So we do nutrition education, food prep education, gardens, you name it. We've got some program at the food bank where we're trying to help people stretch their food budget, become more self-sufficient, and work their way out of poverty. And Dan would remind me that even though food banking started in Phoenix, the letter carriers in Southern Arizona beat Phoenix every year for Stamp Out Hunger Drive.
Do they
That's
really?
Correct. Yes, sir, we do.
With a population three or four times that of the Tucson Valley, that shows you what kind of a caring community this is.
It sure does. Boy, it's a beautiful sight when you turn down a street and see bags lined all the way up on the mailboxes.
Ace producer Rosemary Brandt gives me a very good question to ask you, gentlemen. Is it true that we can donate food that is near the expiration date as well? So how does that work with the canned goods that are still good, even perhaps a little past expiration?
Yes, we can. You know, food safety is paramount for the Community Food Bank of Southern Arizona, as it is for all food banking across the nation. But the USDA and others, when we put a date stamp on a can of non-perishables, they're good past that date. So we inspect every single food item that comes into the food bank. We're going to make sure that it's still healthy and nutritious and not expired. If it's past the due-by date or use-by date, we can still use it, according to the USDA.
And so, when you're looking through the pantry, is there a specific need this time? Or just?
I think protein is always much appreciated. Dan mentioned peanut butter, so we never probably have enough of the protein. But quite frankly, vegetables and fruit, very much appreciated.
Beans
and rice are really popular, and of course, in Southern Arizona. And also, we're doing a virtual food drive. So if you can go onto our website, communityfoodbank.org, you can make a donation, because we can take a dollar of support and turn it into $4 worth of food.
Wonderful. Michael McDonald, CEO, Community Food Bank of Southern Arizona. Dan Turrentine, the food director for the National Association of Letter Carriers. Saturday is Stamp Out Hunger Day. Leave your goods right there by the mailbox. Dan and Michael, thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Bill.
Bottled water on the Buckmaster Show is supplied by our friends over at Culligan. Better water, pure and simple. Culligan, for all your year-round residential and commercial water needs. Coming up tomorrow morning here on KVOI, it's Wake Up Tucson with Chris and Joe. Then we'll have our Friday Focus interview here on the Buckmaster Show. We'll be speaking with Brent Durad, the Visit Tucson CEO. That's at 12:04 when producer Rosemary Brandt and me, Bill Buckmaster, back with you. Have a great afternoon and evening.
Intelligent Talk 24/7, AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. On the web at KVOI.com.